Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Ancient Life Oil.
What is Full Spectrum CBD? Full Spectrum CBD is all the cannabinoids, which in turn gives you major effectiveness. CBD isolate is much less effective than Full Spectrum CBD. No herbicides, no pesticides, pure organic, non-GMO, Full Spectrum CBD. Where do you get the good stuff? At AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Buy CBD tinctures that work. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Oh, baby. All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It is the Derek Hunter Podcast for the first day of September 2021. It's a Wednesday, hump day. Welcome to it. Happy hump day to you all. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. August is done. Maybe it'll rain less in September, although I doubt it. It's probably going to rain more. What a stupid day it has been. What a stupid, stupid, long, stupid day it has been. I'm just sitting here looking at what's going on. I'm going to do this show format a little bit different. It's a little bit before the president is going to speak right now, so I'm going to record half of the show before the president speaks, and then the other half of the show after the president speaks, because they keep delaying it, and God knows when he's actually going to speak. And honestly, I can't even guarantee that he'll say anything worth responding to, because he's so full of crap. It's not even funny. So we'll get to that in a second. Don't forget about the Curse Program at patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. Thanks to the subscribers there. There'll be a new one there this Saturday, even though the Monday show will be a rerun because of the holiday. There'll be a new show for everybody on Saturday, the Curse Program, the Week in Effin' Review. And don't forget about AncientLifeOil.com, your place, the best place for 100% pure, organic, non-GMO CBD oil, AncientLifeOil.com. Enter promo code Derek at checkout for free, fast shipping. You can't beat that deal. Now let's start the program. We have a lot of things to get to before we get to the president. First and foremost, we are out of Afghanistan. This is being touted as success by the media dimwits, not the, you know, for reasons that I can't fully understand, although I suspect it has to do with the connections that many in the media have with actual Afghans. A large percentage of the media has not yet abandoned the truth telling that they've been doing. Some, the Yamiche Alcindors of the world, the people who aren't really journalists, never really were journalists, don't understand what journalism is, are too stupid to understand what journalism is. They're never going to be gotten to. They're never going to be reached. They're never going to change. That's their party hacks. It's like they've been assigned to be a party hack, masquerading as a journalist. They know their role, and they will do what they are told. They're good. They'd make great Nazis. They would make amazingly good Nazis. But the rest of the media is kind of sitting there going, wait a second. We have left Afghanistan, yet we've lost. We've left people behind. We have stranded people, if you will. And it wasn't that long ago that Ginger Goebbels herself was promising that Americans aren't stranded in Afghanistan. And she lectured Peter Doocy from Fox News about using the stranded word. How dare you say that we've stranded anybody? We would never do that. I'm going to listen to Ginger Goebbels say that because it was a lie at the time. And this was at a time when they just controlled the airport. Right. When our troops just controlled the airport, and the people that Peter Doocy is talking about in this clip being stranded are stranded outside of that area. They are stranded now in Taliban controlled territory outside the airport. And Ginger Goebbels was insistent. We don't strand. Nobody was stranded. I don't know what you're talking. Just because you can't get anywhere, just because you can't get away, you can't get to safety, doesn't mean you're stranded. It's actually the very definition of stranded. But just to give this whole conversation context, here's Ginger Goebbels from last week.
Does the president have a sense that most of the criticism is not of leaving Afghanistan, it's the way that he has ordered it to happen? by pulling the troops before getting these Americans who are now stranded. Does he have a sense of that?
First of all, I think it's irresponsible to say Americans are stranded. They are not. We are committed to bringing Americans who want to come home, home. We are in touch via phone, via text, via email, via any way that we can possibly reach Americans to get them home if they want to return home.
There are no Americans stranded is the White House's official position on what's happening in Afghanistan right now.
I'm just calling you out for saying that we are stranding Americans in Afghanistan when we have been very clear that we are not leaving Americans who want to return home. We are going to bring them home. And I think that's important for the American public to hear and understand.
Well, we're not stranding anybody. We're not stranding anybody who wants to come home. You notice the very diabolical way that she was phrasing that. You want to come home. You want to come home. They're very specific to leave themselves the wiggle room so that they can say, whoever they leave behind, well, they wanted to stay. They had the chance. What are you going to do? Just like, you know, originally it was, oh, there are upwards of 15,000 Americans out there. How many Americans have been evacuated? Just over 5,000. So we got all of them. Oh, you got all of them? Wait, what happened to the other mystery 5,000 to 10,000 there? Where did they go? Did the Enterprise beam them up or something? Like, how did they disappear? There's been no explanation as to how the government was so far off in their estimates of the number of Americans in Afghanistan, if in fact they were off in the estimates of the number of Americans in Afghanistan. I'd like to see some proof on that. I'd like to see some questions asked about that, because that's a pretty big, you know, 100 to 200% off is a pretty big miss, right? It's like swinging and missing at not a pitch out, but at a throw to first. Like, that's a pretty big miss there. But we don't have that kind of media, it doesn't seem, at least as of yet. We'll see if the president takes any questions. I doubt it. But it is, it's a pretty big miss that requires some explanation. Because now, these same leftists in the Biden administration are doing something equally as diabolical. They're saying that there are about, well, it depends on who you hear. They keep on lowering the estimate. It's amazing how they keep lowering the estimate even though nothing has changed. They say that there are about a couple hundred, or originally it was a few hundred Americans left behind. Oopsie, what are you going to do? Then it was about 250. Amazing. It went down to from over 300 to about 250. Then it went between 100 and 200, and we're told it's probably closer to 100. Now, what are they basing that on? They're not basing that on anything. They're just making it up. And what's amazing to me is I have some audio coming up of Wolf Blitzer just kind of goes, meh. We just start regurgitating it. And you're going to hear this. You're going to hear reporters for the next couple of days until they can find something else to distract everybody by using this 200, 100, very few Americans left in Afghanistan number. And every time you hear it, doesn't matter what network it comes from, remember the important point here that I'm about to tell you. That is based on nothing. They made it up. There is no verification. There's no way to go. The best estimate, if what the government claims is accurate, with like 5,100 people evacuated, 5,100 Americans out of 110,000 or whatever, you go, well, why are we less than 5% of the seats? Why were they Americans? Why are there any Americans left at all, let alone all the dogs that they left? You saw that story. Disgusting. They had all these, you know, trained service dogs. They just left them in cages at the airport. Because Joe Biden had a deadline. That plane's leaving when Joe Biden wants to go. He's an evil SOB. And there's a special place in hell for him. But it just made the number up. 5,100 out of 110,000? Why weren't there more? If there are Americans left in there, why aren't there more Americans having been evacuated than less than 5% of the people you got out? And there are reports after reports after reports of Americans desperately trying to get to the airport. I got this one CNN report. One American family from Texas, they couldn't get out. They couldn't get past the Taliban. They couldn't get into the airport. This is Clarissa Ward, who was on the ground in Afghanistan. She managed to get out, but she's been in touch with these people. And the Biden administration completely abandoned them. I thought we weren't going to do that. We don't do that. That's not the United States of America. And Ginger Goebbels was just insisting that nobody has been stranded. Nobody. Well, here's a CNN report about at least one family that has very well been stranded.
Well, how crushing do you think this moment is for the, let's say, 250 Americans and so many others, thousands of Afghans who were still desperate to try to get out?
I think it's absolutely crushing. Of course, Wolf. I spoke earlier on in the day with a family of four from Houston, Texas. They told me they had been going to the airport for 2 weeks, trying desperately to get out. They all have American passports. They had gone to Afghanistan to visit the mother's family. And essentially, the issue was they couldn't get past the Taliban. They were in touch with the U.S. military. The military was trying to facilitate their departure.
Military was trying to facilitate their departure. The military, left to its own devices, could have facilitated their departure. They could have easily gotten these people into the airport. Instead, they're stranded because the Biden administration wouldn't let the military do what the military does best, what the military is paid and trained to do. They wouldn't let them do it. You imagine that? That's their job. Do whatever you got to do, but don't do your job. For the love of God, don't do your job. It's insane. So then we get to Admiral Kirby. You know, you just heard Ginger Goebbels say nobody stranded anybody anywhere. And then you heard the tale of somebody stranding. So we go back to a government official. And you will hear John Kirby, retired and disgraced Admiral, Pentagon spokesmodel, say, well, look, not only, we strand people all the time all over the world. That's what we do, apparently. As the United States of America says, that's what we do, is we just strand people.
So what does that look like? How does diplomacy get those people out of the Taliban-controlled Afghanistan?
It's not completely unlike the way we do it elsewhere around the world. I mean, we have Americans that get stranded in countries all the time.
Yeah, we got Americans who get stranded in countries all the time. This is nothing new. Quit whining. So you're behind enemy lines with the Taliban. So what? My God, is that all you do is whine and complain? It's your government. This is our government. This is the spokesmodel for the Pentagon. Look, we get people stranded all the time. Yeah, that's true. You do get people stranded all the time. You know how people get stranded all the time? In natural disasters. By and large, that's mostly what it is. Natural disasters. People decide, oh, I'm going to go over to Fiji or whatever, go someplace. And then there's a giant tsunami, an earthquake, a volcano, whatever it is. And it's complete mayhem. And our government does as good a job as possible in getting those people out. The difference being those countries where those natural disasters occur, Americans generally have an embassy that they can go to, right? Go to the, oh, something horrible happens in the Philippines while you're in the Philippines. You can go to Manila and you can go to the United States Embassy in the Philippines and they will work tirelessly to get you out. You're stranded in the Philippines until they find a way to get you out, until there's a plane, whatever it is. Not your government pulls out the military, regardless, come hell or high water, whether you're ready to go, whether you can make it past the terrorist gauntlet or not. It doesn't matter. Look, we said noon, all right? It's already 12:05. How much time do we have to give people? Screw it. Close the gates. We're Southwest Airlines suddenly, and we've got to worry about our on-time average, so let's just leave these people. See the difference? You see the difference? I think that General Kirby sees the difference, and he's praying to God. Praying to God that you don't see the difference. But I want you to see the difference. Because if you think, well, you can sit there, and I've sat there, and I thought, who the hell goes to Afghanistan? What are you doing going to Afghanistan? But are you going to visit family? Okay, still, what are you doing going to Afghanistan? And you go, well, you got to visit family, but they went when things were much better. In Afghanistan, they went before Joe Biden ceded the countryside and then the capital city to Afghanistan. They went before the government was warning people not to travel to Afghanistan. You see the difference there? The government fully, totally, and completely abandoned them. It's not even close. It's not even a matter for debate or dispute. It's a straight up abandonment. It is a straight up dereliction of duty. The president of the United States left people behind because he said, we are out at a specific day. And that's it, period. If you don't get out by that time, it's on you. We'll work to figure out a way to try to get you out eventually, but, you know, be prepared for the long haul. It's like a hurricane's coming. Be prepared for at least 3 days without electricity, and we'll get there for you. Well, no. Okay, I guess. I mean, you know that's coming. But the federal government is coming. This is the exact opposite of that. This is the federal government leaving. This is the federal government saying, if you can't get past the terrorists who won't let you pass them by a date certain, you're going to be left with those terrorists. When Joe Biden speaks today, I fully expect him to try and find a way to make that sound socially acceptable. Make it sound as though there are literally thousands of Americans who saw this coming and said, you know what? I really want to see Afghanistan in the fall. I want to be here when the leaves change. So I'm not going anywhere. I refuse to go anywhere. Even before he opens his mouth, I can tell you it's a lie. It is a lie. The over-the-horizon, quote-unquote, operational ability that we have is a nice little buzzword. It's meaningless. We're so far over the horizon that it's going to take hours for any action to take place, for any action to happen. There are now private American citizens, retired military, going into Afghanistan in a clandestine way, secretly, on their own, at their own expense, bringing people out, either through flights, charter flights, or through land, walking over the land, getting driving out. That's how pathetic this government is. That's how pathetic the Biden administration has made the United States of America when going up against Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble, at best, and that's being generous. It's more like Pebbles and Bam Bam, except Pebbles would be covered from head to toe and probably chained to a radiator somewhere in a bedroom. I want to play some audio here from Jake Sullivan. Jake Sullivan is the baby-faced, baby-mush-mind national security advisor for Joe Biden. He's spent most of his life in academia, which is people you should avoid completely. If you want somebody to run a study for you, you go to academia. You want somebody to actually make decisions and do things and get things right, get away from academia. He was Joe Biden's national security advisor or deputy national security advisor when he was vice president of the United States, meaning back when Joe Biden advised against the bin Laden raid. So that lets you know the type of caliber of person that we're dealing with here and the caliber of person we're dealing with in Joe Biden. And he's like, well, that guy, he just, because when you're suffering from dementia, you stick with what's familiar. You don't want change. You can't deal with change. New things freak you out. They make you angry. So bring back the old team, you know, the team that sucked, because at least I know them. Jake Sullivan's been making the rounds in the media, trying to polish the turd that is his boss and is his advice, quite frankly, because I think that Joe Biden would do pretty much whatever Jake Sullivan tells him to do. And I want you to listen to Jake Sullivan talking about leaving people behind. Guess what he says about it. Just guess.
That has not satisfied all the president's critics. Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, quote, Joe Biden left behind Americans. He left behind vetted Afghan allies who risked their lives for our soldiers. A disgraceful lack of leadership from an incompetent president. Your response?
My response is that leadership means taking a look at the situation and asking the hard question, what is going to be in the best interests of the United States of America, those American citizens still in Afghanistan, and those Afghan allies?
What is going to be in the best interest of the United States of America and those people left behind? Oh, so are you saying that it was in the best interest of the American citizens left behind in Afghanistan to be left behind? That somehow that is in the best interest of the American people? Of those people? Are you serious? Because I would think that what's in the best interest of the American people is also in the best interest of the United States of America. I'm old-fashioned that way. But if it's, you know, if it's getting everybody out, that's definitely in the best interest of the American people. But according to Jake Sullivan, that might not have been in the best interest of America, per se. So, where to weigh it? And of course, when you come to a collectivist, leftist, socialist, communist, whatever you want to call them, fascist, they always weigh the state's interests above the interests of the individual. It's the antithesis of the United States and how the United States was formed, what the United States is based on, the principles of rugged individualism and individual liberty. All of that is just blown to hell by these leftists who go, well, it's the collective that matters most. And if your being sacrificed helps the collective, then so be it. You get sacrificed. If your existence does not aid the collective, then the collective has no use for you. Much like the Borg would eliminate somebody, one of the members of their collective, if they should become injured or damaged in any way, shape, or form, and they become a liability to the collective, they just eliminate them. That's what I mean. The leftists don't view the individual as it mattering. We don't matter on an individual basis. It is the collective. It is the overall good. And mostly it is their overall good. That's how the president of the United States can speak out of one side of his mouth talking about, I want to bring people together. We've got to bring people together. We need to unite for the good of the country. And out of the other side of his mouth, demonize anybody who voted for a Republican, saying that they are extremists and we need the number one threat that we face are people who vote for Republicans. Violent extremists. They must be destroyed. That's how you can end up dispatching 26,000 troops to the Washington, D.C., and only 6,000 troops to Kabul. And you can leave the 26,000 troops in Washington, D.C. for weeks and weeks and months, really, on end. And you send over 6,000 troops to Kabul and tell them you've got 2 weeks. And anybody else that isn't on a plane in time for my arbitrary deadline, get them out. How many different deadlines did the National Guard have extended and the military have extended in Washington, D.C.? They kept on extending the deadline and kept on extending the deadline. They wouldn't even wait an extra hour for people they knew were outside the walls at the airport. They wouldn't even wait an hour. Americans trying to get in, blocked from getting in by the Taliban, saw the last flight take off from Kabul airport. Tells you something about this president and this administration, doesn't it? I do believe this is really one of those moments where the media has a choice. There's a new survey out that I think it's 35% of people who vote for Republicans have any faith whatsoever in the media anymore. It's down from like 70% in 2016. And one, there's some people in journalism in the media going, oh, this is a horrible thing and those damned Republicans and everything. And it's like, it's not Republicans. The Republicans didn't do this to you. You did this to you. Four straight years of making stuff up. Four straight years of every single mistake, quote unquote, every single correction, all going in one direction. The original story made Republicans, particularly Trump, look bad. And then they said, oh, wait a second. Oopsie. We've got to fix that. And of course, the lie became part of the narrative. That's why. Here it is. It is from Pew Research. 70%. Republicans with some trust in national media, 70% 2016. 2021, it's down to 35%. Susan Glasser is the one who tweeted this out. She's a staff writer for New Yorker magazine and a CNN Global Affairs analyst. She's married to Peter Baker at the New York Times. She's a big media circle jerk right there, just in this one person. And she says, the Trump years, in short, turns out having a president who labels the press enemies of the people makes a difference. No. Donald Trump labeling the media enemies of the people did not cause a 50% collapse in the number of Republicans with some trust in the national media. It was the media that did that. It was everything you guys did at the New York Times, at the New York Magazine, at CNN, at, burying the Hunter Biden story. We saw what was going on. Not that we trusted you to begin with, but so many more people saw what was going on and could see what was going on. And yeah, you earned that lack of trust through your actions, through your decisions. It's a damn joke. It was every story that was corrected was, here's a story that makes Trump and Republicans look bad. Oh, we've discovered something else. We finally did some journalism and it turns out that's not true. Really? Because it's 3 months ago. Now you're getting around to correcting the record? Is there any story? Can you remember any story? Not even just from the Trump years, but from this Biden 6-7 months. Any story that had to be corrected by the liberal media that initially made Joe Biden look really bad, and then they said, oops, that wasn't true. Where a story was retracted or changed or whatever. Can you think of one? No, you can't. There isn't one. You go back to the Trump years. Can you think of anything that made congressional Democrats look bad? Was there any story about, ooh, Nancy Pelosi appears to have engaged in insider trading, or Nancy Pelosi appears to have really been mean to staff and violent with staff? And like, no. It turns out that wasn't true. We were just wrong. We were misinformed. No, you can't. You know why? Because the stories during the Trump years about the Trump administration were from their friends, the journalists, so-called journalist friends. They couldn't come out and say, look, he's mad all the time. He's got a button that you push, Diet Coke comes out. He gets 2 scoops of ice cream and everybody else only gets one. Nobody wants their name on that. And the garbage of he didn't want to go to that cemetery over in France on D-Day because he said, to hell with it. These wussies died for their country. And everybody involved said that didn't happen. There was no name ascribed to it, to that idea that the Atlantic had. The Atlantic editor-in-chief, Jeffrey Goldberg, promised us, we're going to have some more verification of this in the coming days. Never came, never happened, never revisited it. They never bothered to talk about that story again because it was garbage. No sources were burned. Nothing was ever said. Why? Because whoever was telling him was his friend. Look, don't put my name on this, but this is what I'm hearing. Oh, all right. No way to check it, but no way to disprove it either. It's good enough. Let's run with it. So either the people that were anonymous sources in the Trump administration either are suddenly very quiet and loyal, or anonymous sources aren't good enough anymore, which I suspect is very true of this crowd. It can't be anonymous. Look, I'm going to need, this is a wild accusation that the president is senile, but I'm going to need you to go on record. I need something. I can't take this to my editor. It's just your word for it. No. Totally different rules than under the Trump administration. So that's why people don't trust the media anymore, have no trust in the media before. And that's why that lack of trust is absolutely 100% justified. Because you're looking at the media and why people hate the media. Look no further than today's Washington Post, ladies and gentlemen. Their chief fact checker. They have a whole team of fact checkers over there. Although you wouldn't really know it. None of them apparently work in the editorial side of the newspaper and do any fact-checking of the reporting that the Washington Post does. They just fact-check Republicans, period. End of story. Their chief fact-checker is the guy named Glenn Kessler. Glenn Kessler's been around forever. He's the fact-checker. That's his official title, the fact-checker. He has a piece today. No, The Taliban did not seize 83 billion of U.S. weapons. And you think, oh, well, maybe that's all garbage then. What's going on? Have I been hopelessly misinformed? Does Glenn Kessler have some sort of insights? Is he on the ground over there in Afghanistan? Is he doing this? No. He's decided to fact check a quote from President Trump. Yeah. Why? Because why not? Anything else would be a lot like work. So, of course, you fact check a quote from the former president rather than, oh, I don't know, anything from the current president. Like, we're not going to leave anybody behind in Afghanistan. That seems like, to me, that's begging for a fact check. But Glenn Kessler can't bring himself to do that. He's on the case. He's on something that Donald Trump said at the beginning. So, quote, all equipment should be demanded to be immediately returned to the United States, and that includes every penny of the $85 billion in cost. Former President Donald Trump in a statement August 30th. Got to fact check that, right? That's nothing more important. Forget what the president is doing, the actual literal president right now. This is about the former president. So if we don't normally pay much attention to the claims made by the former president, you do constantly. But this new claim, a version of this claim also circulates widely on right-leaning social media, that somehow the Taliban has ended up with $83 billion in U.S. weaponry. The $83 billion number is not invented out of whole cloth, but it reflects all the money spent to train, equip, and house the Afghan military and police. So weapons are just a part of that. At this point, no one really knows the value of the equipment that was seized by the Taliban. Well, then how can you poo-poo an idea that it was $83 billion? How can you do that? You can't. And now they say the facts. They go into the facts here at the Washington Post. It's got to be something new for them. There's got to be a whole team of reporters at the Washington Post scratching their head going, facts, huh? That's new. All right. The $83 billion figure, technically $82.9 billion, comes from the estimate in the July 30th quarterly report by the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, SIGAR, and for all the spending on the Afghan Security Forces Fund since the U.S. invasion in 2001. In recent years, the spending has decreased. For fiscal year 2021, about $3 billion was spent on security forces, which was similar to 2020. Oh, well, we're just basically giving it away. $3 billion? Well, what's $3 billion? That's not even real money. Separately, the U.S. government spent about $36 billion on shoring up the Afghan government. The total bill for the Afghan project added up to more than $144 billion. In any case, the $83 billion spent on the Afghan National Defense Security Forces goes back two decades, including almost $19 billion spent between 2002 and 2009. You can see the depths to which they went to really try to debunk Donald Trump's claim. He makes them so nervous. And it goes on from there. It's this one and that one. And, oh, this was only 5 years ago. And this was 10 years ago. And blah, blah, blah. And ultimately, they come to a conclusion that it's actually only about $65 billion worth of equipment. I'm not kidding. $65 billion. So it's a lie. It's a lie. Because the money was not all spent and not all in that. It's not $83 billion. It's $65 billion. The Pinocchio test, U.S. military equipment, was given to Afghan security forces over two decades. Tanks, vehicles, helicopters, and other gear fell into the hands of the Taliban when the U.S.-trained forces quickly collapsed. The value of those assets is unclear, but if the Taliban is unable to obtain spare parts, it may not be able to maintain them. But the value... Okay, well, we've seen the Black Hawk helicopter that we left them, one of them, flying with a dead body hanging from underneath it, because that's what the Taliban are. They were told this is the new Taliban, that this is how the Taliban roll, basically letting everybody in Kabul know this will be you if you cross the Taliban. if they can get the spare parts. I think with China and Russia all too ready to help humiliate us further than Joe Biden already has, I don't think they'll have all that difficulty, much difficulty in maintaining this equipment. So, but the value of the equipment is not more than $80 billion. That's the figure for all the money spent on training and sustaining the Afghan military over 20 years. The equipment portion of that is about $24 billion. Certainly not small change, but the actual value of the equipment in the Taliban's hands is probably much less than even that amount. Oh, well then, forget it. To hell with it. Now, the New York Times put together a nice little flowchart the other day about how much equipment we actually left and how much, there's thousands and thousands of machine guns, pistols. It's amazing how much we left behind. And some of this stuff, some of it's impractical to transfer. I can understand that to a certain extent. It'd take a long time to move a lot of tanks, for example. Here's the equipment. We left 22,174 Hummers. That's right. 22,174 Hummers. 634 M117s, I think it is. Looks like a troop carrier. Got 8,000 trucks, 162,000 radios, 16,000 night visions, goggles, 358,530 assault rifles, 126,295 pistols, 176 artillery guns, 64,000 plus machine guns, 42,000 trucks and SUVs, 169 armored personnel carriers, 155 mine-proof vehicles, 33 Blackhawks, 76 other different kinds of helicopters, 50-60 different planes, including 10 Cessnas. Couldn't you take the planes out? Wouldn't the planes be pretty easy to take out? You fly them out, and it's done. The helicopter is kind of the same thing. Or you use the helicopters to shoot the planes, and then you land the helicopters, and you shoot the helicopters. You blow up the helicopters. Instead, no. We just left all of this stuff. Now, what is the total of all of this? I don't know. The Washington Post doesn't know, but the Washington Post is damn sure that it's not $85 billion. It doesn't. That seems perfectly plausible to me. Each one of these things are armored, packed up, ready to go. Planes are pretty expensive. Military C-130s, four C-130s. We couldn't blow them up on the way out the door. If you couldn't take them, we couldn't blow them up. It's pathetic. And you know what's not listed on this is all the ammunition, all the explosives. And I still go back to the terror attack of last Thursday that killed 13 Americans. I go back to that and I have to wonder, did those explosives come from ordnances that we left behind that we'd abandoned elsewhere in the country? Really seems like a question that begs to be answered. And how many more explosions will there be around Afghanistan, around the region, around the world, using the explosives that we left behind, the munitions that we left behind? If you left behind 176 artillery guns, you're not leaving any shells around? If you're leaving behind more than 500,000 various forms of guns, how many bullets are you leaving behind? If you're leaving behind tanks and armored personnel carriers, are you not leaving behind ammunition as well? Do you really believe that the military would go through the motions to blow up the ammunition, to blow the munitions dumps, and then go, but we didn't have time to get rid of the personnel carriers? No, that doesn't make any sense. It's that we didn't destroy any of it. None of it. We had no plan, no desire to destroy any of it. None of it. All of that ended up in the hands of our enemies. I'd like to see somebody answer for this. I doubt anybody will. Because you just look at what's going on out there and you think, this is sad. This is pathetic. This is who these people are. I want you to listen to Admiral Kirby. Admiral Kirby over at the Pentagon, he did all the rounds. They're doing pre-damage control for Joe Biden for when he comes out and speaks. If in case the meds don't work, they've got to do pre-damage control out there, try and set the narrative. Kirby's talking about how he wishes he could have gotten, they wish they could have gotten more people out. There just wasn't time, man. It's just, there wasn't time. Now, again, the only reason there wasn't time is because Joe Biden said, I pulled August 31st out of a hat. And we're just going to go with that. That is when we turn into a pumpkin. We will be pulling out of Afghanistan come hell or high water on August 31st. That's it. That's the only reason that we ran out of time is Joe Biden made up the timeline. And this admiral is, well, if only we could have gotten more people out if we just had more time.
Say there's heartbreak. Sure, we certainly would have liked and preferred to get more people out if we could, but the time just wasn't there.
The time just wasn't there. We would have liked to have stayed. It's just the time wasn't there. What are you supposed to do? Time marches on. Time waits for no man, not even Joe Biden. Well, let's get back in the Wayback Machine. Go back 2 weeks, two whole weeks. Even Joe Biden should be able to remember this far back. Joe Biden talking to George Snuffleupagus. This is a little bit long, but I want to give the entire exchange. It's like a minute and 20 seconds long. And I want to give the entire exchange so that there is no ambiguity of maybe you misinterpreted. Maybe he meant this that no, Joe was pretty damn clear at the time. Now, granted, George Stephanopoulos had to twist his arm. You're going to hear Joe Biden not want to say that we will stay until every American is out. You're going to hear that. He does not want to say it at all in any way, shape, or form. Doesn't want any part of it. But Stephanopoulos is recognizing, because Stephanopoulos is a Democratic operator, Democratic Party operator. He's recognizing that the answers he's getting out of Joe Biden are so bad, so damaging, so stupid that he's got to nudge him and then eventually just kind of shove him along. Like, okay, just, dude, even if you don't mean it, you got to say it. Even if you don't mean it, you got to say it. And eventually he forces, because there's a misleading and near the end here. Eventually he forces Joe Biden to go, all right, fine. Good God, we'll stay until everybody's out. It was a lie. Everybody knew it was a lie, but he got him to lie, and now he has that audio out there of him saying, yeah, we're going to stay, because I'm sure he'll say, we stayed until everybody got out who wanted out. Listen to him. 2 weeks ago, the President of the United States.
All troops are supposed to be out by August 31st. Even if Americans and our Afghan allies are still trying to get out, they're going to leave.
We're going to do everything in our power to get all Americans out and our allies out.
Does that mean troops will stay beyond August 31st if necessary?
It depends on where we are and whether we can get ramp these numbers up to 5,000 to 7,000 a day coming out. If that's the case, they'll all be out.
Because we've got like 10,000 to 15,000 Americans in the country right now, right? And are you committed to making sure that the troops stay until every American who wants to be out is out?
Yes.
How about our Afghan allies? We have about 80,000.
That's not the
estimate. Is that too high?
That's too high.
How
the
many?
Estimate we're giving is somewhere between 50 and 65,000 folks total, counting their families.
Does the commitment hold for them as well?
The commitment holds to get everyone out that, in fact, we can get out and everyone should come out. And that's the objective. That's what we're doing now. That's the path we're on. And I think we'll get there.
So Americans should understand that troops might have to be there beyond August 31st.
No, Americans should understand that we're going to try to get it done before August 31st.
But if we don't, the troops will stay.
If we don't, we'll determine at the time who's left.
And
if there are American forces, if there's American citizens left, we're going to stay till we get them all out.
And dude, you're killing me, man. And 2 weeks ago, had to have his arm twisted. And somebody had to pull his hair plugs. I mean, come on, man. And you can just say it. You don't have to mean it, but for the love of God, you got to say it. No, he couldn't bring himself. He really didn't. He had pot committed. I am out of here on August 31st. I don't care. I don't care who does what. If Americans are being held hostage, I couldn't care less. We're out of there. They had their chance. They probably should have come to the airport. They probably should have evacuated earlier. They probably should have evacuated sooner. You know, maybe those people would have evacuated sooner or gone to the, gotten out of the country earlier. If instead of the president of the United States back in July going, look, things are going great. The Taliban is not going to take over. We're going to be out of there. This thing's going to be a huge success. Wonderful, wonderful time. You know, you watch the president of the United States. Maybe these people made the classic mistake of taking Joe's word as a Biden, right? You know, but Joe Biden says everything's going to be going great. Everything's going to be wonderful. Well, there's your first mistake right there. You believed that doddering old fool. Sorry. That shouldn't be enough for a death sentence for Americans because the president of the United States is an idiot and you believed him. It's an indictment of your public school education and liberal sensibilities. It's not necessarily something for which people should lose their lives and their liberty. No, not at all. Now we go back to the weapons that are left behind, because this all comes full circle. You see the Taliban running around, and they really do. They look like the kid from Deliverance all grown up. They've got a weird vacant, it's not a blank stare, it's a vacant stare in their eyes. Like, they have never really seen much of life. I don't blame them for that. They clearly lived in the mountains of Afghanistan and had been suckered into an extremist version of their religion. But they just got this scary-ass look on their face all the time. This blank stare. I don't know how to put it. It's just, if you ever see that in real life, get the hell away from it as quickly as humanly possible. But they're running around with some really nice weaponry. They're running around flying Black Hawk helicopters, running around driving Hummers, armored Hummers. Remember at the beginning of the War on Terror? We were talking about the military. It was ill-equipped. We don't have enough armored vehicles. These vehicles aren't armored, and therefore the roadside bombs are killing them, and this is a failure of the government, failure of the Bush administration. Well, now we left them with all the armored vehicles. So even if people were inclined to, try to fight off these terrorists that we have empowered, the terrorists are better equipped, equipment-wise, than our troops were when we first sent them to war. Let that thought sink in. So as the number of weapons that are left behind there, Admiral Kirby says that the weapons there aren't a threat. They aren't a threat to the United States. And I've seen this argument a few times, even by my friend Ann Coulter. They're thousands of miles away. She says a million miles away. It doesn't matter. They're over there. What does it matter if they've got an attack helicopter? Well, we'll talk about that after we listen to Admiral Kirby say, basically, stop worrying and whining about the billions and tens of billions of dollars worth of weaponry that we left the Taliban. It's not a threat to you.
The kinds of equipment we're talking about, while certainly there's a lethality component to it, it doesn't pose a threat to the United States. It doesn't pose a threat to neighboring nations. I mean, these are not the kinds of things that the Taliban can make great strategic use out of.
No, they can't make great strategic use out of. They can't do it. Well, okay, I'm pretty sure they actually could. I mean, they'll terrorize the hell out of the hundreds, if not thousands, of Americans left behind. That's certainly do that, but they could be rolling into remote areas of their neighboring countries in a lot of those Hummers and a lot of those heavy armored vehicles and the tanks and stuff. They could blow the hell out of a lot of villages. Again, do I really care if one group of people I've never met kill another group of people I've never met? Not so much, but that could destabilize the region. What it could really be used, of course, against the Americans there, but it could really use the munitions, again, the way that we discussed earlier about those explosives at the gate, at Abbey Gate. You could create pretty big explosive devices using those munitions. And those could be it's not like you got to hop a flight to get to Europe. It's not like you got to, you know, hop a couple of... You can get to Europe pretty easily. If you're determined and you're one of those people who, you know, spent 20 years walking around in the mountains, the idea of spending 6 months walking to a European capital doesn't seem all that tough, does it? Especially if you believe you're doing it for God's will. Could easily kill people, our allies, other people. And do you really go, if you're in a neighbor, in Kirby's mentality seems to be like, if you have a bunch of guns in a bag and you're walking through a state that you don't live in, far away, and I'm sick of carrying all, I'm going to carry less of these guns, and they're loaded, and you just start throwing them on the ground. Just throwing them on the ground. Like, well, what are you doing? Some kid could come across that gun. But don't worry, the odds of that kid killing anybody I know or care about, pretty slim. So, throw this one into the bushes. Let's throw this one to where the school bus lets off. And let's just throw these. That's the kind of mentality. Shouldn't you be bothered, at least pretend to be bothered by the concept of you enabling people killing other people? Call me crazy, but that seems like something that should bother people. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. There is one more piece of audio I want to play because of all the things, I think each piece of audio has been more disturbing than the previous one. This one is perhaps the most disturbing of them all. This is Jake Sullivan, again, who looks like a prepubescent boy, not ruling out sending money to the Taliban, not under the guise of here's a pallet full of cash like the Obama administration did with Iran, but under the guise of we might, if they behave themselves, which is absurd, if they behave themselves, maybe we could be international partners with them. Maybe we could send them financial aid. Now, this is, well, I'll explain why this is happening and why anybody would say something this stupid after we listen to him say something this stupid.
You say we're going to work with the Taliban. Does that include the prospect of giving them aid?
Well, first of all, we do believe that there is an important dimension of humanitarian assistance that should go directly to the people of Afghanistan. They need help with respect to health and food aid and other forms of subsistence, and we do intend to continue that. Secondly, when it comes to our economic and development assistance relationship with the Taliban, that will be about the Taliban's actions. It will be about whether they follow through on their commitments to safe passage for Americans and Afghan allies, their commitment to not allow Afghanistan to be a base from which terrorists can attack the United States or any other country, their commitments with respect to upholding their international obligations. It's going to be up to them. And we will wait and see by their actions how we end up responding in terms of the economic and development assistance. So,
not ruling out sending foreign aid money to the Taliban. Not ruling out. Look, it depends on them. Now, if you remember, back about 5-6 days ago, it became a talking point amongst Kirby, Biden, Sullivan, Ginger Goebbels. They said, well, you know, we're going to have some, they were talking about the leverage that we would have if on the off chance, which we knew was going to happen, if on the off chance some Americans were accidentally, not really, it was by design, accidentally left behind by the military, by the Biden administration, that we would get them out diplomatically. We would find some way to get them out. And people asked, rightly so, what the hell do you mean you're going to find a way to get them out? How are you going to get them out? What are you going to bring to the table? What do you have? And they said, well, we have leverage, certain leverage that we can exert over the Taliban. And most people heard that and thought, what the hell does that mean? What kind of leverage do they have? They have no leverage over them. This is what they think they have. The prospect, the possibility that we're going to send you pallets of cash. We're not going to send you pallets of cash just yet, but we might send you pallets of cash if you behave yourself, if you let us evacuate our people. Now, what is stupid about this is you've got Jake Sullivan right there saying, well, we're still going to send them food and medicine. which is largely, if you are the despotic leaders of a country, if you want to stave off a revolution, if you want to stave off being drawn and quartered, torn limb from limb, you need to make sure that there are certain things that are taken care of. First and foremost among them is food and medicine, right? Housing already exists. Housing, you don't have to build housing because housing already exists. But food and medicine are something you need to be able to provide. If you can't provide those things, then the peasants are not going to have a good day, and they're not going to put up a picture of you in their room without drawing a little Hitler mustache on you. So you want to have those things. So what our government is saying, that don't worry, Taliban. Rather than give the population of Afghanistan any reason whatsoever to be less than satisfied with your rule, we're going to make sure that we're going to give you food and medicine. And if you behave yourself and let us evacuate our people through whatever means after we leave, then we might give you cash on top of it. Now it's really, really, you want to talk about empowering the Taliban. The question for the Taliban is, and for ISIS, and for ISIS-K, and for Al-Qaeda, and everybody else, is do they want cash more than they want the prestige and leverage and power of holding Americans hostage? Well, you see, it might not be $83 billion. It might just be $60 billion, even if it's just $24 billion. They left billions upon billions of dollars worth of military equipment across the country in Afghanistan. That gives every group over there that can get their moldy mitts on anything a whole lot of money. Potential money, even if you're getting pennies on the dollar, selling it to third world dictators, to Vladimir Putin, to China, to whatever it is, you're getting pennies on the dollar. Pennies on $1 billion is still a lot of money. So the idea of foreign aid loses all of its sting because of our own stupidity. We've already given them the foreign aid. They just have to deal with delivery fees. That's how stupid our government is. All right, I just watched the President of the United States deliver what's a victory speech. And I'm going to just give you a heads up and warning. I'm not going to go into it in depth here, but this is going to be very short and there's going to be a lot of swearing. So if you're offended by swearing, even if you're one of my daughters, stop listening now, because this is some fucked up shit. This senile son of a bitch comes out to the podium and is like, hey, my son Bo is dead. Yeah, do we know? Maybe Bo killed himself so he didn't have to deal with your ass anymore. Do we know that? Is that too cold? It's no more cold than what that piece of shit president did to the Americans, the families of the Americans that died as a direct result of his incompetence. Fuck Joe Biden. It was an unbelievable speech that defied reality. He was doing great. And no matter what, we had to get out of there by August 31st to save lives. How the fuck do you do that? Don't ask me to explain that. And then he turned tail and run. He tucked his tail so far between his legs, you'd think he was a tranny and it was his dick. Yeah. So I'll have a lot more to say about this on tomorrow's program, but to talk about it now, it would just be like a curse show, and most of you didn't sign up for the curse show, so I assume you don't want it. You don't want to hear about how that fuckwit is just a complete pile of human garbage. You want to hear about it in polite terms or in polite enough terms. So I will give that to you tomorrow. Quinn, you're not supposed to hear those languages, but you're here. What do you have to say?
Well, we got these from Margo.
Yeah, you got some Petoskey stones when we were in Michigan.
And I'm wearing a pumpkin necklace.
And Bailey's wearing a pumpkin necklace. All right. Yeah, I'm far too pissed off to do... I didn't expect that. I thought... I don't know. I thought it would be based in reality. And the speech was clearly not based in any way, shape, or form in reality. Unfucking believable. So thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with a more somber analysis of this little fuckwit going up there. And goddamn, what an asshole. Thanks.